Lacrosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Aldinger. Two earthquakes rattled two states. The first, Hawaii's Big Island, the second in Southern California.
Scientists say it's important to note that there is no connection between the quakes in Hawaii and here in Southern California. The same scientists say, however, that we should expect aftershocks in the coming days. No damage expected, especially here in Southern California, where most of the buildings are built to withstand a 7-magnitude quake.
ABC's Matt Gutman in Los Angeles. A 15-year-old migrant accused in a Times Square shooting last night was arrested in nearby Yonkers, New York. The suspect allegedly shot at a security guard in a clothing store, wounded a tourist, and is accused of opening fire on police officers who pursued him. A day after the special counsel's report, President Biden says he'll designate a task force to oversee classified information during presidential transitions. The S&P closed above 5,000 for the first time today. This is ABC News. Nikki Haley pushing forward with her presidential campaign after a poor showing in Nevada.
It's a kind of symbolic loss for her that adds to the substantive losses that she has been suffering. Bottom line is she didn't get any delegates out of Nevada. She lost badly in Iowa. She lost by double digits in New Hampshire. Puts more emphasis on the possible breakthrough that she hopes for 15 days from now in her home state of South Carolina. But it sure doesn't seem like there's a lot of energy in her campaign right now as she soldiers forward and hopes to get through Super Tuesday.
ABC's political director Rick Klein. Heads up, Cupid. Wednesday is Valentine's Day. A survey by WalletHub says lovesick Americans are expected to spend $25.8 billion, which breaks down to about $181 per person. That is among those who are celebrating. Men are expected to spend about twice as much as women, with chocolates being the most popular gift, followed by flowers and jewelry. Daria Aldinger, ABC News.
If you only have a 401k, you're not getting the most for retirement.
Wait, what?
Add a Robinhood IRA on top, then they'll boost it by 3%.
You can do that?
And if you transfer in any retirement account, you get 3% on top of that.
Is there a limit to the match?
No limit. Robinhood Gold gets you the biggest contribution match of any IRA on the market. Sign up for Robinhood Gold at Robinhood.com/boost by April 30th. Subscription fees apply.
Investing involves risk. 3% match requires gold for 1 year from first match. Must keep IRA for 5 years. Match on transfer subject to additional terms and conditions. Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I love Jennifer Beals, and it is my pleasure to welcome to Nightlight a guy who kissed her, Peter Moore.
I wish I could say she was madly in love with me, but we starred in the High School Musical.
You and I kissed during a play once, Pete, and I will say I didn't really feel a connection.
That was also in The Boyfriend, but that was a different version of The Boyfriend.
That was The Boyfriends.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 8 till 10 on Eagle 1490 AM WLCX and on the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin has seen its first ever tornado touchdown in February. The National Weather Service says it happened between Evansville and Edgerton in south-central Wisconsin early last night. There's no word of any serious injuries, but there are a lot of reports of damage. A bipartisan bill to ban deepfake audio and video from political ads in Wisconsin is moving through the state legislature. Rice Lake Republican Senator Romaine Quinn at a committee hearing yesterday.
I know there was an ad during the New Hampshire primary on the presidential side that had artificial intelligence in the ad, and I think disclosure is going to be more and more incredibly important as we try to wrangle the potential impacts of this.
The bill would impose $1,000 fines on the makers of ads that use artificial intelligence but don't disclose it. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
The Bucks lose at home. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. After going 1-4 on their road trip, the Bucks came home and lost again, this time 129-105 to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Doc Rivers says he considered just resting all of his starters.
Before the game, being honest, I thought if we could keep it close, we'd play the guys. But if they got, my thing was 18-20, I was pre-planned tonight. You thought before the game, maybe sit all of them.
The Bucks play again tonight against the Charlotte Hornets at Fiserv Forum. NFL Super Bowl 58 coming up Sunday night. The 49ers against the Kansas City Chiefs. Wisconsin native and former Badgers linebacker Leo Chanel on playing for Chiefs defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo.
Yeah, you know, I think we step up to the plate when things get tough. And, you know, some games, like, you know, it might take us a series or two to play, hey, like, let's just play who we are. It's just about being physical, being who we are, trusting our identity and trusting our techniques and what Coach Spags has taught us.
That's Chiefs linebacker Leo Chanel. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, low in the upper 20s. And partly sunny into tomorrow, high mid-30s. A mix of sun and clouds and a high in the upper 30s Sunday. The warmth continues into early next week. Sunshine at around 40 degrees for Monday and Tuesday. Currently 35 degrees.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. The Mississippi to our left, Granddad on the right. We're right in the middle. Eagle 1490 WLCX, the talk of La Crosse.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome Friday night, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, he's a hockey coach, and his hockey team made it into the playoffs tonight, so we're going to give Dr. Johnny Lupinacci the night off. Not a problem, though. We got producer Nate, you know, getting him ready, going to throw some questions at him, and then at the bottom of the half hour, though, you know, special guest Jimmy Kay coming in, going to be talking a little bit about referendums. So it is Friday. It is the TGIF version, as they say, thank goodness. Or we should say, thank goodness it's Busted Pencils. Nate, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. It's Friday. I'm here with Busted Pencils. I'm happy to be here.
Well, that's good. You know, and hey, in fact, let's put it out there. If you want to be here with us, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Jump in, free for all, as they say, Friday. You know, give us a call, anything you want. A lot of interesting. First full week, Nate, Busted Pencils. Every day this week, we were on, did a show on Monday. The Network for Public Education, Carol Burris, came in talking about vouchers and charter schools. On Tuesday, UW faculty Kimber Wilkerson, teacher shortage, specifically special education. Wednesday, our special educators amplified. Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie, bringing hope and telling stories about what it really is like to be a teacher. And then last night, you know, we had our great guest. She was a caller on the show for the last 4 years, caller Joanne, now Dr. Joanne. Well, she's always been Dr. Joanne Orvec. Social media, gambling, cell phone usage, all of that stuff. Nate, lots of stuff to go on there. However, Nate, let's go right, though, to the news here. I'm going to ask you a question, Nate.
All right.
Artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Should we be teaching it to kids in schools?
Should we be teaching it to kids in schools?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
come on.
That one, I'm a little bit conflicted about.
Okay.
You know, you have to worry a little bit about plagiarism and kids writing their own papers and things. That being said, I do see uses for AI in just our everyday life. For instance, I've worked as a journalist for a few years now, and I've come across complicated court documents that's 250 pages long, and I have to get a paper out by 6 o'clock that day, or a story out by 6 o'clock that day. I'll go over to a AI chatbot. I'll say, here's this court case. Break it down.
Break it down for me.
What's the big things? What are the big themes? Yeah. And then I can use that to, instead of having to read through a 250-page dense court document, sort of break down in easy words what it means, what it's all about. So I don't
good
know.
Good use. Good use there, and the nice things you're putting out there, you know, plagiarism. But hey, coming out of the publication K12dive.com, the future is artificial intelligence. Are students ready? And so, Nate, this is the question. And so, to Richard Calcutta, students need to learn about artificial intelligence and its inner workings now. But even more critical, says the CEO of the International Society for Technology in Education, is that educators teach pupils not just about the technology, but how to partner with AI in their own work. Whole lot there, because I think when people start to hear teaching artificial intelligence, so are you saying we need to teach kids how to build artificial intelligence, how to computer program? Now, this isn't about computer programming here. This isn't about building machine learning, going for deep, you know, deep learning and all that. This is about saying it's out there. It's a technology. Nate, you gave a great example of saying it's like, look, I can use it to go through lots and lots of pages to give me a nice summary so that I, you know, don't have to spend all that time reading 250 pages. It's a good thing you know how to do that. Should we be intentionally teaching students that there's this technology out there called artificial intelligence, and should we be showing them ways that they can use it? And the other thing, ways that we don't want them to use it.
I like the word partner that was used there. Partner with AI, not rely entirely on it, but use it in tandem with what we already know and what kids are already learning in the classroom to achieve a goal, achieve whatever it is you're looking to do.
Right. You know, there it is. You put it out there. So it's a tool. I hear this more often, though. Everybody's worried. You brought it up, Nate. I don't want my fifth graders, my eighth graders, I don't want them using it to write their papers for them, because they still have to learn how to write. And that's plagiarism. We we've done quite a few shows on AI and plagiarism. This isn't what we're talking about. When you say, yeah, I like the word to partnering with AI, because right now kids are using their, you know, they've got laptops, they've got their cell phones. And all of these things are loaded with artificial intelligence, whether we want to admit it or not. And so the reality is saying, how do we partner, cooperate, and recognize potentially how artificial intelligence can maybe even enhance some of the things that we maybe couldn't do in the past? You know, that's where, and I'm going to go out on a limb, see what you do with this, Nate. There's a professor at Penn, Wharton Business School, Penn, Ethan Mollick. He has put out there and says, why not use it? Because it can help you be smarter.
Okay.
Now I'll give you the example of it. So I know a lot of stuff about teaching and learning history. Okay.
Sure.
Got a whole PhD in teaching and learning history, a whole PhD in teaching and learning history to elementary school kids. Okay. So just in case anyone wants to know what expertise does Slecker have, there it is. Can I then use AI to help me know more or be more productive as somebody who has a PhD in teaching and learning history with little kids? And so can I use this tool? And Nate, you gave a good example. One of the things I do when I'm doing I got to do a lot of research, got to do a lot of reading. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll read through 20 articles and go, that was a waste of my time. Didn't find anything. What you just put out there, the idea that I could have a pre-read of articles before I dig into them to say, you know, what are the key findings of in this article? What are some key highlights? And I could look at it and go, okay, this is one I want to get into, right? So now it's identifying and helping me find the best materials so that I can spend the most time developing and digging deep into the things that I want to know. It's therefore making me smarter. That's the point. What do you buy it, Nate?
I buy it. I buy it totally. You know, that example that I'll keep going back to of sort of pre-reading something, and then you can, that sort of gives you a jumping off point of, well, I want to go down this route. And then you can sort of dig into that a little bit more, maybe in a specific, as you said, article or court document or research study or something like that, using it to sort of using it to our advantage. And I got to go back to that word partner, working with the AI to really help yourself get a good handle on when you have a lot of information, maybe where to go, maybe a jumping off point or something like that.
Well, it's a tool, right? If you look at it that way and say it's a tool, then we should learn how to use those tools because, hey, when you don't know how to use tools, they'll sit there unused. But, hey, given to a master craftsman, a tool doesn't take away the master craftsman. The tool enhances the ability for a master craftsman to get more done, to be more artistic, to be more productive.
Exactly.
So as students are going to use, you know, can we use this? And I tell you, there are lots of uses too. We had the conversation about the special education teacher shortage, but the ability to adapt and enhance learning for students to come in, you know, whether it's voice activated, the ability for somebody who may not have the ability to speak, for people who have physical disability, the tool of AI can really enhance the learning situation, can enhance communication tools, all of that. So this is what I want people to be thinking about with AI is we're not asking the question, should students be allowed to use it to write their papers? Okay,
right.
That's a crappy question. Okay, we're done. No, and we shouldn't let them use Google. And before that, we shouldn't let them use encyclopedias. We shouldn't let them copy and not do their own work. That's just what we should never do. But we've got a real tool here. And where it's going, I think that's the other thing is when you listen to people that are concerned about it, it's going, well, I've heard this quote, it ain't going to uninvent itself, Nate. Okay.
Yeah.
And knowing that means, okay. And here's the other thing. It just gets smarter every day. And so where are we heading with this? The ability of, as you say, teams, I don't just read a little bit more here, you know, as we're coming up at towards the end, but I'm great. I got to figure where, and here's the quote from Richard Collada. Every kid that graduates today is going to work on a team where not every member of their team is human. How do you work on a team where not all members are human? How do you know what tasks to hand off to non-human counterparts? That may freak people out to go, wait, what do you mean? Like, I'm going to be sitting there with the Terminator? No. Come on, chill out. But the fact is that teams, and you start to say, is this work that we should invest human time on, or is this work we can have AI do more efficiently so that the three of us humans can spend more time being deep and embedded into the work we do? Numbers 844-967-2789. It's Friday. It's Busted Pencils. Doing a little look at AI. When we get back, though, hold on, because I'm going to do a little bit of looking at what the show talked about this week. If you want to jump in, though, 844-967-2789. If you want artificial intelligence to be your team member, then Busted Pencils, that's what we're here for. Back after the break.
Eagle 1490 AM.
Pizza's here.
Oh, great. I'd love some, but I'm worried about my stomach issues.
If you're worried about having diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools, it may not just be stomach issues. It could be a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and talk to your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Earl Ingram.
My special guest is the curator and founder of Wisconsin's Black Historical Society, none other than Claiborne Benson.
I want people to know that Wisconsin has a beautiful, rich African-American history. Many people think the King celebration and all of those other kinds of things are more important. They occurred in Wisconsin as well, and we've impacted the entire nation.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
Matt Damon's mom? What? Yeah, we're going to have Matt Damon's mom on Busted Pencils. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. The number 844-967-2789. Yes, that's right. That was Matt Damon. And yes, ask his mom. Don't bother him. He's busy. He's got some things. What would Matt Damon's mom say? Segment in Busted Pencils coming up in the future. Right now, though, we were asking AI questions, working on a team. Got a caller, Joanne from Madison. I got a feeling this is Dr. Joanne Orvec. Joanne, how are you?
Really great. The discussion was absolutely addictive. So I had to come in and just make a very small comment, though. Can you imagine being a kid? Just imagine being a kid and being faced with this AI that is so intelligent. I mean, I would be intimidated. I would feel like an imposter. I would feel that I was being outclassed. And I think that teachers are going to have to be really skilled in dealing with those issues. Those kids are going to be faced with this amazing entity, and they might feel that their own skills, their own tentative attempts to be productive would be laughable in that regard. And I think I think that the teachers can do it. They'll find ways to do it, but it'll be a tough effort to solve that issue.
Joanne, are teachers ready? Maybe let me add to teach this. I mean, you know, does it? I'm thinking of fifth grade teachers out there right now that I work with. Are they ready to teach AI? And what should a fifth grade teacher be teaching fifth graders about AI? Do we even know that?
I'm putting you on the spot.
I was just putting you on the spot, Joanne.
Oh, no problem. All right. I think we need to do a lot of talking with students about what they feel about the process of working with AI, to understand that. We understand now, after all these years, what students feel like working with, a very elegant machine or some type of a calculator or whatever. But the idea of working with something that is that intelligent and productive and all of that, and feeling perhaps inadequate. Why should I do this? You know, the computer can do it. We've got to give them the reasons to want to do things themselves. And I think we can. I mean, it's almost the opposite. I tell my students, I teach them the opposite of plagiarism. I teach them to want to get their own ideas out so badly that they hate their editors. They hate me for making them change those words. I'll give them a reason, of course. But they have ownership of their words. I really love what they're saying, or their words, ideas, productions, whatever, designs. They need to express themselves. And so, again, it's going to take a while, but we need to do a lot of listening.
Yeah, we need a lot of listening. Joanne, thank you for calling. I appreciate it. And again, appreciate you busting pencils last night, particularly. Nate, you got something to add there?
I do. I think it's important to remember when thinking about something like AI or any new technology that comes through, the kids in high school, especially, and younger than that, even they're going to be on sort of the forefront of all of that. They're going to be ready to jump in right away. So, and I think Joanne does bring up a good point. And I think it is important for teachers to learn and figure out how exactly can the teachers get in front of this so that they can teach responsible use of AI, responsible and smart use of AI that will help them instead of, you know, whatever it is.
Well, Nate, I think what, you know, bring up the, you know, I had a conversation, you know, with a colleague and a colleague who is on the side of going, it's the worst thing that has ever happened to teaching and learning. And we must do everything we possibly can to stop its use because it is destroying the ability of kids to do independent work. And I was like, okay, I think you may have some points in there, but the idea of stopping it,
it's never going to happen.
I don't care what, you know, like anything, but this one, it's already beyond stopping. And here's the thing. If you think you are actually creating policies in a classroom that forbid students from using it, they're going to figure out a way how to use it anyway. And guarantee you this, most kids, as you point this out, Nate, particularly high school, but I guarantee you middle kids, fifth grade. I mean, really, we're actually very surprised. Kids are always miles ahead at using stuff. Sometimes, though, and this is the real learning opportunity, and I think this might be where Joanne is talking or a little bit of the side, to the point that they need instruction. They need somebody to step in and say, okay, you've been messing with this. You've been playing with this. You went here. You went there. It told you this. It told you that. Did it, you know, and even Joanne, did it make you feel sad? Did it, you know, because you can kind of get this thing. It's like, oh my gosh, this thing knows everything. Potentially you can either take that back and go, therefore I'm on break. I don't need to know anything anymore. Cool, teacher. Just give me my AI and I will give you. Or you might sit there and start to question, I think this what Joanne was saying, your own essentialism. You know, what good am I then if this can do that? That's kind of weird. And I got to tell you, I'm one of those weird kids who had those kind of weird, creepy thoughts. Like I would go there, Nate. And so, you know, you're laughing. Come on, man. You knew I was weird.
I was the opposite. I was just go about my way as a kid. But I know exactly what you're talking about. That. And I think some kids, probably like me, who are going to need a little bit more of that push towards it. But I think Joanne, yeah, brought up a great point. And yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Producer Nate and Tim, just, you know, chatting a little bit about AI. Again, a little bit, you know, great week. Great, well, true first week of Busted Pencils. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Charter schools, voucher schools, teacher shortages in special education, bringing hope from the classroom. Teacher Joanne, oh, she's, I mean, Dr. Joanne Orbeck, giving us a lot yesterday, particularly on social media, sports betting and kids, and then even calling in tonight on artificial intelligence. I tell you what, though, here's the big question. What is a referendum? We hear this a lot. Well, what would it mean to a referendum? What does a referendum mean to kids? What does it mean to the teachers? What does a referendum have to do with your pocketbook? We got an expert on referendums coming up, Jimmy Kay. You probably heard him here on Civic Media in lots of various ways, particularly if you've been listening to any sports. Jimmy Kay bringing the sports, but bringing some referendums, school referendums, expertise. When we get back, Busted Pencils, back after the break.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for matinee on air.
ABC News, I'm Daria Aldinger. Two earthquakes rattled two states. The first, Hawaii's Big Island, the second in Southern California.
Scientists say it's important to note that there is no connection between the quakes in Hawaii and here in Southern California. The same scientists say, however, that we should expect aftershocks in the coming days. No damage expected, especially here in Southern California, where most of the buildings are built to withstand a 7-magnitude quake.
ABC's Matt Gutman in Los Angeles. A 15-year-old migrant accused in a Times Square shooting last night was arrested in nearby Yonkers, New York. The suspect allegedly shot at a security guard in a clothing store, wounded a tourist, and is accused of opening fire on police officers who pursued him. A day after the special counsel's report, President Biden says he'll designate a task force to oversee classified information during presidential transitions. The S&P closed above 5,000 for the first time today. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Green Party candidates will be on election ballots in Wisconsin this year. That's after Wisconsin Elections Commission action yesterday. A Green Party candidate could make a difference in a close election in a key swing state, and the latest Marquette poll suggests President Biden has the most to lose from third party and independent candidates. The Green Party has yet to put forward a nominee. It's tax season again. Seniors can get free help filing their taxes. The AARP's Darren Wasniewski says volunteers are trained on the latest tax code changes and can help in person or online.
You just come once, give your documents, and then complete everything electronically online after that. Going right over to just providing online coaching.
There are 120 AARP tax aid locations all over Wisconsin. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
Earl Ingram.
Sandy, people are talking about influencers. I don't see too many septuagenarians or octogenarian influencers.
They're alive.
We're trying. Radio shows like this are our efforts to be influencers, I suppose.
Yeah.
I
mean, we can possibly be influencers.
Well, maybe. I don't
Calvin's
know.
Calvin's laughing.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, low in the upper 20s. And partly sunny into tomorrow, high mid-30s. A mix of sun and clouds and a high in the upper 30s Sunday. The warmth continues into early next week. Sunshine and around 40 degrees for Monday and Tuesday. Currently 35 degrees.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
If you only have a 401k, you're not getting the most for retirement.
Wait, what?
Add a Robinhood IRA on top, then they'll boost it by 3%.
You can do that?
And if you transfer in any retirement account, you get 3% on top of that.
Is there a limit to the match?
No limit. Robinhood Gold gets you the biggest contribution match of any IRA on the market. Sign up for Robinhood Gold at Robinhood.com/boost by April 30th. Subscription fees apply.
Investing involves risk. 3% match requires gold for 1 year from first match. Must keep IRA for 5 years. Match on transfers subject to additional terms and conditions. Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
I saw the Ramones in that place on their last tour.
Oh, wow.
I was doing the club next door, and we just walked next door after our show.
Did you use the old "We're the Comedians" line?
That's a big thing in stand-up. For those of you listening, comics will use that to get in anywhere. Hi, we're the Comedians next door.
Yeah, we're the
thinking,
comics.
Like you're with the FBI or something, but sometimes it works. People are like, oh, that's so cool. Come on in.
Oh, you're a comic. Yeah, come on in.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 8 till 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. What La Crosse and Western Wisconsin is talking about. You're soaring. With the Eagle. Eagle 1490 WLCX.
My God. Okay.
Here we go.
Hey, this is Tim from Rise Against here on Busted Pencils Radio.
It kills me not to know this, but I've all but just forgotten what the color of her eyes were.
We don't ever want you to forget. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Yes, that is truly Tim from Rise Against. He listens to Busted Pencils. How could he not listen to that? You know, listen to that music. It's Busted Pencils. It's the theme approach. We're back, though. Number 844-967-2789. I put out the question. I know this is a big deal, particularly, well, actually anywhere right now, but in Wisconsin, but a lot of people. Referendums. We got a special expert, Jimmy Kay. Jimmy's coming on the show. Jimmy, you got to help us, though, because I'm thinking my neighbor, all he knows is that somebody tells him to vote yes for the referendum and somebody tells him to vote no for the referendum. And both of those people are absolutely adamantly sure that they're right. What the heck is a referendum, Jimmy?
Before I say anything about the referendum, I just want to say it is way cool that you have Rise Against voicing a liner for your show. That is amazing.
Isn't that awesome?
My mind was blown. I'm sitting here like, wait a minute. He's actually voicing a liner for the show.
Yeah, that's right, man.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. As someone who goes to a lot of concerts, like I was not expecting that from an education show. So I was really excited. All right.
That's what we do here every night, Jimmy. We mix punk rock and education. They go together.
I love it. That is amazing. All right. So what is a referendum? Well, the way in Wisconsin a referendum works for schools is since it was implemented back in the early 90s, it allows a school district, members of a district, to vote to exceed the property tax levies, which were put in place. There's a limit to exceed this limit. The limit was put in place because of rising property taxes back in the 90s. They had gone up so much in a short amount of time. They said, we got to cap this. We can't have this spiraling out of control. People are getting mad because their taxes are going up. So they put in this cap on how much a district can levy in property taxes in a given year. And at that point, they had tied it to measures like inflation. So as inflation grew, so did the amount that the levy could collect. But that pairing sort of decoupled in the late 2000s. And what it meant was that as inflation kept going, the amount that could be collected didn't go with it. And that's created this big gap that's happened 15 years since then. And that's why you're seeing so many of these referendums. So what it is you're asking your tax base, are we allowed to collect more beyond this cap to help fund things like operations, pay teacher salaries, or and those were the operational ones, or if they want to build new facilities and they need to go above and beyond what they have, you know, in the bank or in their funds to do capital projects, which is pretty common because a lot of facility projects are, you know, have 8 or 9 figure price tags. And that's a different type of referendum. They go to the taxpayers and they say, do we have your authority to borrow this money or to raise the levy for operational to pay for these things? So that's what a referendum is asking. They're asking taxpayers to allow them to exceed a limit so they can collect more money.
Or they're asking taxpayers to say, would you like to pay more taxes up and above and beyond the taxes that you're already paying?
Correct. So
Jimmy, we got to make it simple for my neighbor. My neighbor wants to know, you know, he's like, look, are my taxes going up or not if I vote yes on this referendum? Because if they are, I'm already paying way too much taxes. And now we're getting into it. Oh, hey, you know what?
That's a common response. And I'm sorry to interrupt him, but it's a common response to it. But there's other variables in play. It's not just simply, we're just going to straight up raise your taxes. It's not raising. It doesn't necessarily raise your taxes because of other variables and other things that get collected, whatever your mill rate is, et cetera. There's other variables. So your taxes don't necessarily go up. It's just the amount that the school collects as part of that is the part that does go up. Okay.
And we want to talk about why would schools need that? Because that to me is also the real kind of part of the story of going, like, why aren't they just getting enough anyway to begin with? However, LA Tom is on the line. You know, I'm pretty sure L.A. Tom wants to jump in on the referendums. L.A. Tom, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, guys. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and not the corporations are not the government. And what I want to say is there a difference between the referendum versus propositions? Because out here in California, we have propositions. And what they've done is they've muddied the waters so bad. And the way that they write these propositions is just absolutely, I mean, you need a law degree or more in order to even understand the proposition. So the one thing I would say is if you guys are doing referendums and it's the same as a proposition, is to be able to make it very, very clearly, you're going to pay this much more in tax, but this is what you're going to get back from your money. So whether it is, this is going to pay for shoulder pads and things like this for school, for football, then that's what that needs to be written out exclusively, and not this no means yes and yes means no and all of these different ways that they do it now to screw everybody up, you know, in terms of how they write out these either referendums or propositions.
Well, Tom, let's see. So, Jimmy K, what do you think? Propositions, referendums, they sound similar. Do you have any expertise in telling the two apart?
Sure. So a proposition is a ballot initiative, which is done by voters. But in Wisconsin, they have to come either through the legislature or through a local governing body. So there are more restrictions in Wisconsin. So we aren't allowed to do that here.
OK, but the referendum. So, Tom, the referendum in Wisconsin particularly, though, is a revenue issue. And so, Jimmy, here's the question, though, too, is going, but why? Why do we need a referendum? I mean, you say, well, we want to build, and even Tom said this, maybe we want new shoulder pads, maybe we want a new ice skating rink, all those, I think those capital things. But, I mean, you even said, though, raises for teachers, potentially even operating costs. Why don't the schools budget enough money? Why do they have to go back to the taxpayers for the money anyway?
The short answer is that schools don't have another way to raise revenue. The schools are primarily funded through the state or through property tax revenues, you know, from the levy. They get a little bit in federal aid. They get a little bit, you know, very like a sliver in like donations and things like that. But the bulk of the income for schools is either in state aid or in local property tax levies. So that's the vast majority of how schools are funded. Schools can't just say, well, we're raising the cost of our services because it's public education. They don't have that ability unilaterally to do that. So they have to ask the taxpayers, are we allowed to collect more money from you so that we can pay for things in an operational referendum for things like maintenance and salaries, or in a facilities referendum, a debt issue referendum to pay for building a new building or repairing an existing one?
But isn't there, you said, okay, so school financing 101, which there really isn't a school financing 101. It's a complex calculus, really, when you think about it. But you pointed out, though, public schools largely funded off local property taxes. However, state contributions and some small sliver of federal contributions. Could the state, if they wanted to, provide more funding to public schools, though, Jimmy?
Yeah, they could. I mean, and that's really been the fight since, you know, really the last 10 or 15 years, is that there's been this gap between, you know, how inflation and how schools have been funded previously. And there's this kind of this dovetail of what is actually the schools are actually receiving when they aren't building these things in tied to inflation. So now there's this gap that's widening over time. And that's why you're seeing so many schools have to go to referendum. They're trying to make up parts of that gap because, as it is, you know, they can't continue the operations as they are in a lot of cases. For example, this spring and your February and your April ballots this spring, there are 101 referendum questions around the state for over 90 districts, and 2/3 of them are for operational expenses. Operational expenses, again, are paying for the service, education, teachers, or for maintaining buildings. And this gap is it's become much more pronounced this year, because it is the end of the federal ESSER dollars, the COVID funds, pandemic recovery funds. Those have expired, and so many districts, this year use the rest of what they had left, because they have to spend them by September, to backfill their budget this year, including the district I'm in. Well, that goes away next year, and all of a sudden, the $1.3 million you backfilled with federal COVID relief dollars, how are you going to make that up in the next budget year? Well, the answer is, for a lot of districts, an operational referendum.
But it's okay. And so that may be a good reason. And we think about that, but I want to get into this though, because I'm going to take, you know, whether or not this is truly my position, I will never let you know, or I might come back. But I'm talking to my neighbor, and he's like, Tim, look, the reality is I can't pay anymore. And if we're going to do something for our neighborhood schools, our public schools, instead of voting yes for us to spend more of our money, why don't we organize some kind of a protest and some kind of a movement and some kind of an action to hold our legislators accountable for actually making up the difference and putting in the money that needs to be there? And in fact, why don't we insist on making legislators do their job, which is funding the public schools? Because you know what? That's one of the major things a state legislature has to do, is take care of the communities they are representing. And so therefore, putting forth the money that is needed to educate our children, your children, their children, maybe you don't have to just keep asking the taxpayers all the time. You could actually ask the legislators to do their darn job. Sorry,
I'm going to give you two parts in this response, right?
Okay.
First part of this is the legislators, largely in Wisconsin, don't really have to be accountable to it, because they're in very safe districts, right? The way the maps are now, before, you know, and obviously this is changing this year, but the way the maps have been for the last 12 years, there hasn't really been that accountability, because there's not really an ability to vote people out. A lot of the elections in the assembly, several of them go uncontested or weakly contested. They aren't funded well, whatever. So we have a overwhelmingly one-sided legislature. So there's not really that incentive to do something like this, to follow that. And the other part of this, and this is the complicating factor in all this discussion, is that there is a massively declining enrollment in public schools, and it's tied to declining population, right? Mm-hmm. So there are fewer kids being born, fewer people, you know, in public, although public education is the number one way kids by far get educated in Wisconsin, like mm-hmm. well north of 80%. There's fewer people in public schools. 70% of school districts in the state have declining enrollment. A lot of them are rural schools, and rural schools make up over half of all the districts, 420 of them in the state. So when you combine declining enrollment, which is what gets you the state aid, it's tied to a formula, number mm-hmm. of people you have in the seats. As that goes down, your state contributions come down, your local tax levies come down. Well, the problem is when your enrollment is dropping and you're losing these funds, the cost of keeping the lights on and keeping teachers doesn't tend to go down with it. It trends up because of inflation for costs for employees, and obviously for building and materials and things like that. So it's a complicating factor. And when I asked this point blank to Howard Markline, who is the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee in the legislature, that's what he pointed to. He said the declining enrollment is why you're not being funded. And that's point blank what I was told at a listening session that was here last month in town, in the city I live in. So that's where it's at. We have this complicating factor, declining enrollment, which is tied to how schools are funded. And there's not a whole lot of incentive for the legislature to act on specifically funding public education, because again, as I said, you know, it's not like they're going to get voted out under the current maps.
Okay. So
although that's changing, obviously, with the, you know, they're going to have some maps drawn. There's a lot of litigation that goes through, but as it is, there's, you know, it's almost a supermajority, and what are you going to do with that, right?
So it's just not that simple. However, though, I mean, come on. I got a point, though, don't I? I mean, the reality is that it sounds to me what you're saying, though, too, from that kind of comment is that too bad. Your population's declining. You don't need any more money anyway. We're not going to put it forward. Boy, that just sounds to me like that's somebody who doesn't really care about local public schools. And I'm going to go back, Jimmy, and say, I'm sorry, but as a state legislator, your job is not to figure out how to harm your community. Your job is to figure out how to make your community thriving. Man, that's what we're doing here. Rise Against Tim, Busted Pencils, fully led at Education Talk. If you want to get in, 844-967-2789. Jimmy K, school board, when we get back, what does it mean? Back after the break.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
988 Wisconsin Lifeline. How can I help you?
Share hope, find purpose when you become a 988 Wisconsin Lifeline counselor. The 988 Wisconsin Lifeline provides free and confidential support to anyone experiencing a mental health or substance use crisis. Staffed by Family Services, 988 has experienced tremendous growth, and more statewide counselors are needed to answer calls, texts, and chats to the Lifeline. If you want to share hope and find purpose in your next job, apply now. You can work remotely from anywhere in Wisconsin. Training is provided and flexible hours are available. 988 Wisconsin Lifeline counselors enjoy competitive compensation and benefits packages. Most importantly, you can share hope and find purpose when you become a 988 Wisconsin Lifeline counselor. Apply today at 988lifelinecounselor.org. Family Services is an equal opportunity employer.
Paid for by grants from SAMHSA and the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
We are Busting Pencils!
You can't feel the heat until you hold your head.
But you're with Busted Pencils. There's lots of heat here all the time. 844-967-2789. Thank you, students. You are Busting Pencils. That's what we do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And actually starting next week, 6 o'clock, moving to 6 o'clock. So, you know, if you're out there getting a pizza, taking a drive home, give us a call next week, 844-967-2789. Referendums 101. We had a little bit of a schooling advice, or actually we learned a little bit there. Our guest, Jimmy Kay, Civic Media's own Jimmy Kay. All right, Jimmy, you said one little thing, though, before we talk about your adventures in school boarding. There was a little bit of a complicating or a little bit more about something about vouchers and how vouchers affect the funding. Throw in that little tidbit of detail for the listener.
Sure. I don't think it's a secret, but the last budget that was signed, the biennial budget signed by Governor Evers, did provide some increases to private and voucher schools. Some increases for what parents can apply to go to those schools. It also showed kind of the disparity between how special education is reimbursed. If you're a private or voucher school, you can get a 90% reimbursement rate. And for public schools, that's at 33%. And in a rural district like the one I live in, when 21% of your students are special needs, that's a huge cost. And schools have to take on this cost. They can't turn people away. So they have to take on this cost, right? And that dips into general fund, which is the whole school budget, right? So they don't, there's not enough funding for special education. And the way I look at this, it creates a very clear equity issue, because you have to have everybody, you know, public education in our constitution. It is a state constitutional right, and we can't leave kids behind. But in that same aspect, we don't have that funding, built into the formula the way that it is now for private and voucher schools. So that's one of the biggest calling. When you read anything that Dr. Jill Underley puts out, when you read the things that Evers puts out, what they're calling for, it's usually one of the first two or three things that they mention is a higher special education reimbursement rate.
Well, just seems like it's what you should do. And thank you, Jimmy, for pointing out that little civics lesson for everybody on Civic Media. Your state constitution absolutely requires the taking care of the public education needs of every child, every citizen in the state. That's what you have in your state constitution. Okay, Jimmy, so the reason you know all this is you're a school board member?
I am a school board member.
Oh, look at that. Anybody watching on the live video feed, he showed his credentials.
I have credentials.
So I'm going to tell you when I'll give you a little quick story about my adventure running for school board. In a very small town, and I was a college professor at the time, and I found out that I wasn't going to get voted in, because the only reason I was running was to enforce my liberal beliefs and to come in and get rid of the Christmas play. And so yeah, that was my adventure in running for school board. Not that I had been a teacher for 20 some years and that I had kids in the school and that I had all these concerns about education. It was that, well, you are a professor, so you're a liberal, and you must be coming to cancel the Christmas party.
My experience much different. I went to early vote because I wasn't going to be in town on Tuesday. The Tuesday went in the Friday before. I said, "Well, who do I vote for school board? There's nobody on the ballot." Are there any write-ins? Nope, there's no write-ins. There's nobody on the ballot. All right, I went over to the school, filled out the paperwork, and 13 write-in votes later, I'm on a school board. So my experience is a little different than you.
Big majority. Well, you got a lot more votes than I did. That's for sure. You know, 13. Okay. I mean, so what does a school board member do? Okay. You've been voted in, but I mean, like most of the times you guys are just sitting there taking lots of abuse from angry parents, right? I mean, that's the job requirement.
I don't have to worry about that so much. In our district, it's a little more hands off, but you do get to see, and in my case, with two kids that are very young in the district, I get to kind of see the day to day, see some of the concerns that are brought up. I get to learn a lot about the schools that my kids are in, right? And this is a new experience for me. I've only been on the board for closing up on 2 years, so you know, 2/3 of the way through this term. And what it's taught me is that there's a lot more involved in schools than you would just look at a building and think. Like you would assume that there's some complicating things, but once you actually get into it as a board member, you're like, wow, there's a lot of moving parts. I would say for my part, if you're not in like referendum mode, it's actually kind of chill. You work on things as they come up. You deal with the hiring, the comings and goings, the usual stuff that you would do in any kind of organizational setting. When you're going through a referendum, there's more processes because you're actually designing and meeting and doing all those things. But yeah, a lot of meetings, a lot of emails, a lot of communication. And that's one area that I felt like I brought an asset to our school board, is that as someone who's been in media for 22 years, I could bring communication to the table and help shore up things like our social media communication, our outreach with the public, things like that. So everybody brings a little bit something different to a school board, and that's what I brought to ours.
But let's do that everybody part, because I think that it really is key, is to recognize, okay, why a school board? And this is the public school. And again, democracy 101 for people. You have to be elected into the school board because it is of the people, by the people, we the people, all the people types of things. They are run by a locally elected group of citizens of that school district to serve on that board, because you're supposed to represent the best interests of the community. The whole idea that this is some kind of like liberal attack, all that, it's like, no, this is voting. Sorry. And if you want to run for school board, in fact, boy, we've seen some of the kind of scary stuff with some of the other people who are running. But you know what? Johnny and I always say this: as long as democracy's working, then we're happy. If we don't like who was voted in, then we vote them out. We keep going with that. But I mean, this is the part, you know, and I remember writing a thing. Now here's my kind of take on, however, right, going back to when I wanted to be on school board, I thought I brought qualifications. What are the qualifications to be on school board, Jimmy?
Qualifications are to get onto the ballot and get voted in. There's nothing more to it than that. We have a very wide range. We have a deputy. We have an emergency room director. We have somebody who runs a holistic medicine practice. We have a contractor, and we have a state patrol inspector. And then, of course, myself, a guy who talks for a living. So that's what we have on our school board, right? Every school board's a little different, but the qualifications are engage in your community, get on the ballot, and do what's right for the kids.
Have you had, tell me about your most kind of tense moment as a school board member.
Most tense moment as a school board member was probably the first meeting I went to, because I had no idea what I was walking into.
No angry parents yelling at you, just simply, I was
getting nervous. A little bit. The referendum was a little controversial, but I mean, that's anything, right? You just got to talk to people and they get it.
Jimmy K, producer Nate, Busted Pencils. Check you out next week.
Providing you with an eagle-eye view of what lacrosse is talking about. You're soaring with Eagle 1490. Tell a friend.
Hey, everybody, it's Todd Alball. Noon to 3 on Monday, we have a cure for your Monday blues and also a look back at what happened over the weekend. Join us on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Valentine's Day is here. This year, give the ultimate gift. Name a star after your sweetheart. This is Rocky Mozell with International Star Registry. For 45 years, we've named millions of stars for celebrities, dignitaries, and individuals worldwide. For $59 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, you can give the most memorable gift. The star you name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Visit starregistry.com or call 800-282-3333.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albin.